Hi, and welcome to another episode of Natural Fertility with Dr. Jane. I, of course, am Dr. Jane, and today I'm riding solo, which means we're going to break down a topic that I'm seeing a lot of questions about, things that I'm seeing in practice, and even things that I'm experiencing myself. And today I want to talk to you guys about ureoplasma. Ureoplasma is probably one of those things that is the, I don't want to say it's the biggest reason for unexplained infertility, but it's often overlooked, and the complications that it can cause and the role that it plays in infertility, complications that it can cause during pregnancy, the postpartum, and of course, for even like symptoms in the link with endometriosis and adenomyosis. So I'm going to break it down into three compartments: the impact that it has on fertility, how to test it, and then how to treat it. I recently had someone reach out, and my fertility strategist said, hey, she says she's done antibiotics for ureoplasma 16 times, and she still has not been able to clear it. And I was like, what? 16 times? Who let her do that 16 times? So there are some nuances that I think a lot of the conventional system does not understand at all, and therefore you have not been given the proper treatment, and that's why the body is not clearing this infection. But it absolutely does have an impact on fertility. I have my notes here because I know you're going to ask me about studies, and I want to show you studies, and then I'm going to, of course, talk about my clinical experience. And I am a big believer in connecting those two together. It's really important to look at the research. It's really important to understand what these beautiful people are studying and seeing, but I have to look at my patient and I have to understand their symptoms, their energetics, their mental and emotional health, and do the testing and see how that's connected, and then see what that person needs in terms of what is going to give them the ability to clear this infection. Because oftentimes we're going straight for the ureoplasma without really assessing the whole person and seeing if their body even has enough energy and capacity to be able to clear the infection physically, mentally, and emotionally. So I'm going to dive into all of that, but let's talk about the impact on fertility. And I'm going to just bring up a couple of papers that I think are really important. So there's a paper by Dr. Claudia Lelli and her colleagues, and she's an Italian researcher and clinician, and she's published extensively on ureoplasma and reproductive tract infections in general, and the impact that it has. So the paper in 2013 that I'm talking about basically demonstrated a significant association between ureoplasma and infertility, especially with women who have tubal factor infertility and unexplained infertility. Now, if you have ureoplasma, you don't have unexplained infertility, and that's really what this is about. This paper really basically changed the narrative that ureoplasma is just commensal bacteria and it's not clinically relevant. Of course, this was in 2013, which is, 12, 13 years ago now. We know more than that. So then if we go to, miscarriage and preterm, and Dr. Kyung Ah Oh is a researcher in maternal fetal medicine. And of course, with other colleagues, she published a paper that ureoplasma colonization significantly increases the risk of preterm labor, intra-amniotic infections, and neonatal morbidity. So it basically showed us that the subclinical infection is a big driver for these pregnancy complications. And the paper that, the next paper that I really like is by Dr. Michael J. Novy. And he's also a big, highly respected reproductive endocrinologist and perinatal researcher. So when he looked at the ureoplasma species that were present in the amniotic fluid, he noticed that there was 20 to 30% of ureoplasma species in the amniotic fluid of preterm deliveries. So even mothers that were asymptomatic. So a very pivotal point showing that infection does not need to be obvious to be harmful. And, there's impacts on baby that were done by Rosemary Viscardi. She's also an MD and her colleagues. And she's a neonatal researcher specializing in inflammation and infections. the research around the ureoplasma exposure there to bronchopulmonary dysplasia, altered immune development, and increased risk of neurodevelopment delays in the preterm infants. These are just a few papers that I picked out, but there, if you start following these researchers, you'll see more and more and more things that are coming out. So without a doubt, there's a really big impact of ureoplasma on infertility. And I'll kind of give you my lens as a holistic provider and what I'm seeing in clinic. And of course, I test, and we're going to talk about the testing. I don't believe in unexplained infertility. I believe that pregnancy is a natural process. So if it's not happening, something is being missed. I also don't think that the body's faulty and it's just stupid and it stopped working the way that it should. I believe that the body is really wise and it has this inner wisdom. And I'm reminded by that inner wisdom every time I get a cut on my hand and I watch how my body has the ability to heal itself without me doing anything. That's the inner wisdom of the system. Now, there's things that I can do to support that healing, and then there's things that I can do that will slow it down. I can do things like eat more vitamin C rich foods and keep that wound cleaned and making sure that I'm hydrating well and even add some collagen or protein, vitamin E, vitamin A, things that are going to help to speed up the healing. Or I could put a band around my wrist and stick my hand in the refrigerator and I can still watch the wisdom of the body to try to get the blood flow to the area, but now it's going to take much, much longer for the system to heal. Point being is the cut on the hand just is a reminder that the body has these mechanisms that are internal and they are driven in our DNA, our biology, to essentially heal itself. And so if you're not able to ovulate properly, your ovulation isn't very strong, you're not able to, fertilization is not happening, implantation is not happening, you're losing your babies, you know, at 6 weeks, at 8 weeks, at 12 weeks, and whatever, you're having complications during pregnancy, there's something that we missed along the way that we are not understanding. And any nutrient deficiency can cause a complication or a pregnancy loss. And whether that's vitamin D or CoQ10 or selenium or iodine or zinc, any nutrient deficiency. And any microbial imbalance can also cause complications, whether that's for fertility or pregnancy. Now, microbial imbalance, it depends on how strong it is. It's a little bit of candida overgrowth versus a lot. There's a little bit of ureoplasma present versus a lot. And certain infections just do not have any room in the body, to be honest. And I think there's still a lot that we don't really understand about the microbiome. In general, the gut microbiome is the one that's the most studied. Now we're getting more into the vaginal microbiome. But there's, of course, limitations with us being able to test some of the other microbiomes because these tests are invasive and not everyone is going to need them. You're not going to go for a uterine biopsy unless you have struggled with infertility for a really long time. And so we have a little bit of this kind of skewed data that we're dealing with. Point being is there's a lot that we still don't understand. And this is where you have to be able to sit with a patient. And this is what we do in my practice is we sit with a patient and we look at multiple factors. What are the levels of inflammation? What is the blood sugar dysregulation? What is the progesterone level, the estrogen, the histamine, the gut function, the methylation, the vaginal microbiome? We're sitting down and we're starting to look at what are all these different pieces going on, and then what are the symptoms that she's presenting with that's causing her issues, that's making her doubt herself and therefore feel lost in this fertility journey where she doesn't understand why her body is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And this is where I meet women all the time, and this might be you, where you just feel broken. You feel broken and then you go to the doctor and the doctor says, no, there's nothing there. It's just the way that you are. Keep trying. And then if it doesn't work, we'll do IVF. And if you're tired of hearing that as a recommendation and you go, there's something deep inside of me knows you're missing something. That's my hope that you come to this podcast. And then if my message resonates, that you apply and you work with us, because if we can help, we would love to help. And if we can't help, we'll make sure to point you in the right direction so you know what your next right step is. But my belief is very deep in the body. I think the body is very, very smart. And the female body is incredible. I mean, we make life. It's incredible. So back to ureoplasma. That was a little bit of a rant, but the ureoplasma is one of those infections that absolutely has a very strong correlation, not just with infertility, but complications during pregnancy and complications for the development of the baby. So doesn't it make sense to look at, do we have ureoplasma or do we not when a woman is struggling to conceive? And I think that it does. So the way that you test it, I mean, there's kind of the gold standard tests, if you will, or things that are more recognized by the conventional system. And then there's things that are coming out in the functional medical world that detect these infections. So you could do, an MALIS analysis by iGenomics, which is essentially a biopsy of the uterine lining. Now, this means that the infection is pretty high up there. And typically, this is a very invasive test and is not something that I recommend unless you have a history of, you know, recurrent pregnancy loss or implantation issues when you have done, you know, and gone through IVF. There's a lot of histamine infection, endometriosis, but it's not the first line of testing that I'm going to recommend. You can do a urine PCR panel, but I do find it's less reliable. And I have seen in practice where that got tested negative, but when we tested the vaginal microbiome, which is my preferred method, and I'll talk about that in a second, we actually saw those levels of ureoplasma. And maybe I find in the urine PCR panels, it obviously, it is assuming that you catch it at the right time, like you catch the urine at the right time. And there's also a time in the cycle where the ureoplasma is going to be more active, or not in your menstrual cycle, yes, but also in the cycle of the bug and it's growing and breaking down and reproducing. So there's that whole component, and I'm actually not going to get into that today, but it's really understanding the bug as well. It's not just in the life cycle that it has and how it behaves, and it behaves a lot more like a virus, but then it has these kind of parasitic behaviors to it as well. So it's a tricky one to try to catch. So the way that I prefer to test it is through vaginal microbiome. I have been using US Biotech, which I really like. It gives me a quantifiable number, and I tend to tell my women to test no supplements for 5 days before you're testing, because we want to just see the microbiome. And that includes different like fibers and probiotics and prebiotics that you're taking, because essentially sometimes if you are taking a lot of different probiotics and prebiotics, or even vitamin C and zinc and, you know, all this beautiful immune system support, it essentially keeps the bug suppressed enough that we cannot see it. And then but yet you still have symptoms. And then it seems like, well, the bug isn't there. I tested and it's good, but you were taking a bunch of stuff to essentially help your body keep that bug under control, but not completely get rid of it. So, 5 days of no supplements, preferably, including probiotics and prebiotics. And then I love to test it around ovulation. So around ovulation is when the estrogen levels are the highest, and the bugs love estrogen. There's actually a really good triangle of estrogen, histamine, and infections, and how it's this triad of things feeding into one another. So then when we tend to see higher estrogen, we tend to see higher histamine and then higher infection load. And so then we can get rid of the estrogen first, but remember, hormones are not going to be the root cause. They usually are dictated by something else. Then we really have to get after the infection. So when we get rid of the infection, the histamine levels come down, and then the estrogen can also clear more easily. That doesn't mean that you don't need to support estrogen clearance. It just means that if you just clear estrogen and you don't address the infection, it's going to be very difficult for you to essentially keep the estrogen down for a long time, because the infection is there still feeding that cycle and that triad. So around ovulation is the best time, 5 days, and it is a vaginal microbiome swab. And what I'll say to my women, sometimes the women are really scared to show something. They're worried to find out that something is wrong with them because they don't want to feel broken, yet they feel broken because they can't get pregnant. It's this interesting, you know, dynamic that happens. And so what I will tell my women is, hey, I need you to talk to your body and tell it to show us what's wrong. So it sounds silly, but we need to let the bugs come out and we need to feel the infections, if you will. We need to feel, I don't want to say like, I want to see your worst, you know, because if I can see everything that's going on, and then it's just a matter of laying it out and knowing what's driving what and what do we need to go after. You can also test the male. And I think it is really important if the ureaplasma is found in either male or the female, both partners need to be treated. And we'll talk about that in the treatment section in a second. But for men, I mean, the PCR urine test is going to be the most common one. And it is not as accurate, you know, as I'd like it to be, or it's not as reliable. And then you can, of course, do a penile swab. And that is obviously less pleasant. Not that, you know, the vaginal microbiome test is super pleasant either. But for the males, I think it's a little bit less pleasant. I can't speak from my true experience, if you will. But yeah, and so I tend to just test the women, and then unless I really suspect it in the men, and the way that I will suspect it is based on symptoms. The symptoms are not just, this is where I was kind of convinced that ureaplasma is going to show up as some kind of reproductive symptoms. And whether that's, you know, a vaginal discharge, more smell, more like itchiness or pain during intercourse, the sensation in like even menstrual cycle being painful, or having a smell to the blood, it's not just, it can absolutely be all those things, but it's actually can be just a weakened immune system. And so maybe that's heaviness in the lungs, and you feel like you really have some allergic symptoms all the time, and you have a little bit of those higher histamine symptoms. And whether that's just seasonal, so when there's snow is melting, or, you know, spring is here, or cats or whatever. And then there is, and it's one of those like, I just developed this allergy over time, meaning that your immune system has gotten weaker and weaker and weaker over time. It could be a lot of bladder symptoms, and that's actually what it was for me. And I didn't realize. And so when I realized that there's a lot of bladder symptoms, so last year I tested for ureaplasma and it was positive, and I had really high numbers, and I was shocked because I did not have any like vaginal reproductive symptoms, but I had a lot of bladder symptoms, which I kind of assumed was due to my postpartum and having a little bit of a leaky bladder, or not feeling like I could empty my bladder all the way. Going to the bathroom more frequently. Some of my patients, I didn't have the symptoms, but some of my patients, it was waking up frequently in the middle of the night to go pee. So sometimes we associated that with a urinary tract infection, but ureaplasma can very much cause those symptoms as well. And what I will say around the testing is, there's no bug that ever comes alone. And so I think that this is something that we need to keep in mind in terms of research, where you can try to isolate this bug and see the impacts that it has. But in reality, it's never just this one bug that's in the system, because our microbiome is very, very diverse. And there is a normal level of pathogenic bacteria, a very low level, but almost a normal and beneficial for the body, certain ones. And then certain pathogenic bacteria, if you will, are not meant to be in the system at all, period. So there's still a lot that we're trying to understand about the microbiome. And so no bugs come in isolation. So to say it's just these symptoms are caused by just ureaplasma, I don't think that's looking at the complexity of us as humans and the complexity of, you know, the reproductive, not just the reproductive system, but the microbiome as a whole. So in terms of the bladder, those are some of the symptoms. And then it could be brain fog. It could be that you're getting sick quite frequently. It could be that you just are carrying a little bit of extra inflammation. So those were all kind of my symptoms. They were a lot more vague. And this is why I went from, I don't know if I need to test the vaginal microbiome, because you don't have a lot of symptoms of, you know, the reproductive besides having infertility, if you will, so infertility and frequent recurrent pregnancy loss, that is a sign of ureoplasma and needs to be addressed. So now I just tested because I find when I look at the gut, when I look at the vaginal microbiome, even if there's nothing in the vaginal microbiome, which sometimes is the case, there's very little going on in the vaginal microbiome, then it's great. We can rule that out and then really focus on the other components. But sometimes we see a lot in the vaginal microbiome, and we still have to look at the gut microbiome because the two are so related and the gut is so influential for the reproductive microbiome. So not just the vaginal, but also the uterine, the fallopian, the ovarian microbiomes as well, because it's all wrapped in there in the abdominal cavity, right? Your uterus, your fallopian tubes, your ovaries, they're surrounded by your guts. And so the barrier between the guts and it's like we think of them as these separate system, but it's all kind of meshed together. And there's a really strong communication system between all of the pieces, between all of the organs. So we want to keep that in mind. So when we test it, the next thing we need to do is, how do we actually treat it now? What's the approach? So the first thing that I'll say is you need to understand what else is going on in the body. So you never just look, oh, it's ureoplasma, let's go after it. Because this is something that I learned from my mentor, Dr. Leah Hedgman, and this has been a couple of years now that I've been practicing this way, where the pathogen has an energy. And the reason that the pathogen is there is because we haven't processed things energetically. So the pathogen holds the space for what we energetically have not processed yet. And so these bugs kind of come into our bodies at a certain point in our lives, and it's understanding, why did the bug come in, and why was our body not able to fight it off? What else was going on? There's also a hierarchy of how we treat pathogens. So the bigger the pathogen, the dumber it is, the easier it is to get rid of it. For example, parasites are really big. And so they're at the top of the hierarchy of treatment. We have to address parasites before we can address mold and fungus, before we can address the bacteria, and then before we can address viruses. And if I just look at the vaginal microbiome and I just see the ureoplasma, but I don't actually know the nutrient levels in the body, I don't understand the microbiome of the gut and what's going on there, I don't understand the methylation or the detoxification capacity and the level of inflammation, chances of me going in with a really strong ureoplasma protocol and being successful in getting rid of that infection is really low, because I haven't potentially addressed other components that are causing the infection to be there, or why the body hasn't had enough energy to overcome it. And whether that's the immune system is struggling, the liver, the gut, the methylation, you know, the body just doesn't have enough nutrients to overcome this infection, let alone the mental, emotional, kind of the psychological energy of the bug. And I know that might sound like a little bit out there, but I have now experienced it myself, and I have taken many, you know, clients through it, where you literally see people change. You see them change. You see them change their behavior. You see them change just energetically how they see themselves, what they do, how they think, how they interact with people. Their relationships change. They get a new job. They quit an old job. They get a new partner. Whatever it is, like the person, there's a lot of change that happens for them, because as they clear the bug, if we give the space for them to actually process the trauma and that came in when that bug, then we see a different person. You might not be ready for that, but I need to get that out there. Because like I said, you know, when I hear someone being on antibiotics 16 times for ureoplasma, I just think that's really poor treatment. And I never blame you, but to do 16 rounds of anything, that's, you know, after two rounds, you should be saying, I don't think this is working. Because, you know, with the protocol that I have, and I'll share components of it, it's like people clear it. And maybe they don't clear it the first round, and then we need to do a little bit more antimicrobial herbs and a little bit more energetic work. But we do there's a significant change in the person when we're very specific with protocols. So you do most likely need 7 to 10 days of antibiotics, because ureaplasma is quite hard to clear without it. It just takes too long. And I think in the space of fertility, most of the time, by the time clients come to me, they're ready to conceive yesterday. So we don't want to take extra time if we don't need to. And it's quite effective. So it is doxycycline and azithromycin. And you do that for 7 to 10 days, depending on the severity. And then I follow it by 4 to 12 weeks of antimicrobials. And usually it's 2 to 3 antimicrobials. And it depends on how the person is responding, what's happening for them, how strong the infection is, what else is going on. And so I typically, and then I'll do some vaginal suppositories with garlic. I'm not going to, there's only one brand that I trust to do that. It is Biomedica. Do not go and say, okay, I'm going to just go ahead and start doing all of this stuff. You need to test, you need to call out the infection, and then you need to make sure that you're supporting methylation, you're supporting energy, you're supporting immune system before you dive into just putting things up random spots and taking pills in different dosages that, without really truly understanding what you're doing. So I'm very hesitant to like actually share the exact herbs and things that I use because I don't want you to go and take all of these things on your own and think that like, well, I tried it because she said that it would work and then it didn't. There's a lot of things that I do and my you know, clinicians do in order to make sure that we're actually successful in clearing the thing that we're trying to clear. So you start with 7 to 10 days of antibiotics. You go 4 to 12 weeks. So like me personally, I cleared my ureaplasma very quickly because I knew what else was going on in my body. I have a really strong communication and connection with my body that if I tell it, okay, this is needs to go and this is what I'm doing, I can literally, and I literally felt the bug clearing and getting out of my system. And I could see it on my ring in terms of my HRV and how much it was changing when I was doing that. So, and then I did some vaginal suppositories as well, which just gave it this very local effect of let's get really literally killing the infection. So I'm always tracking biomarkers as I'm clearing the infection. The person should be feeling different. They should have changed in their bowel movements. They should have changed in their bladder symptoms. So maybe that's not waking up in the middle of the night anymore. Or maybe that's actually feeling like the bladder is fully being emptied as opposed to having to sit on the toilet for a while and feel like it's not. Maybe it's leaking that happens because of, oh, but I jump a lot or I do CrossFit or I do whatever. And that's why the leaking is like, no, there is, you need to heal the pelvic floor. Even if you've had a couple of babies like myself, you still need to do lots of things to, it's still possible to heal the pelvic floor and not have to have leaking as part of the norm, if you will. I think that's an old story and we don't have to live that life anymore. So the next component is the emotional and energetic component. And I think this is one that the conventional system is definitely not talking about, but I don't see a lot of my colleagues talk about it either. And I think it is the most important part of it. The antibiotics and the antimicrobials help us to clear physically the bug, but then it will bring up the energetics. And so I just got off a call with one of my patients yesterday and we're going through ureaplasma protocol. And there's a couple of things that she said to me. And I felt this personally as well. And so it just really, you know, when I did my protocol last year, she was like, I just felt something unwind and get out of my system. That was just like, I just felt something unwind and change. And she became softer. She wasn't as tense anymore. And then she was like, I've been having like crazy dreams, like a lot of vivid dreams, really crazy dreams. And we started to unpack some of them. And one of the dreams, there was a lot of kind of older, like ex-partners that she had. There was some like drugs involved. Like it was just chaos. And we were trying to unpack it more and more. And essentially, ureaplasma is often associated with a sexual experience that was non-consensual. Now, that doesn't mean rape. It just means when a woman wanted to say no, she said yes. And I remember a moment in my life when that happened. And there was this partner, and it was just like, oh, I should, like, this, I did not want to have sex with this person, but I was too scared to say no or too uncomfortable, or I didn't want to be ashamed or whatever it was. And there was this moment for me that I remember, and I was like, this is probably when I locked it in, when this bug became, quote unquote, part of me. The, for her, she also had like a couple of instances, but one that came up that was like, yeah, there was this, and it's almost like a dirty sensation, like, oh, I shouldn't have done it. And she felt really ashamed about herself after, which is really common. And so she was dreaming about all those things. And it's interesting because that's the subconscious trying to process it. It's trying to process these past experiences that happened and then where this bug lodged in. And then we can get into generational stuff as well, but I won't because I'll keep you in this realm for now. But ureoplasma very much has, it thrives in disconnection from the womb, from our voice, and from, you know, our own internal agency. And so when the woman is struggling with infertility, the biggest thing that's happening is she's questioning who she is, and she's questioning her worth, and who is she if she can't have children? Why is she here? And I think having children is a really big component of fulfillment of our lives, but I'm a big proponent of it not being the only component. But what I really, when I see that disconnect from the woman in this questioning, I actually now think about what is the bug that's causing her to think about her this way. And like I said, it might be a little bit too out there for you, but these bugs change the way that we think. They change the way that we view the world. There are certain beliefs that we create because we have this really heavy energy in our body. And when our frequency is low, there's a lot of negativity that tends to be drawn to that. And whether that's your work is not going the way that you should, you're fighting with your partner all the time, you're stressed and you can't say no, whatever it is. When we clear these bugs, when we clear these pathogens, when we start to support the mitochondria, I literally see life come back into the cells, and I see life come back into the woman, and then she starts to believe in herself, and then we start to see the AMH improve, and then we start to see the FSH go down, or whatever the parameters, you know, for fertility. Oh, my LH surge is so much stronger, et cetera, et cetera. So a really big connection and peace there, not just to fertility, but to the energetics and the quality of your life. And I think that's really important to address. And that's what I really love in the practice. I think to be part of someone's transformation is very difficult for me to articulate, but it's probably like the only reason that I do it is because I get to be part of a transformation for this person, baby or not. I get to witness a transformation. And it's a gift, and I don't take it for granted. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. I really hope that it kind of breaks down the ureoplasma on a much deeper level for you. It is not just about the infection, taking the antibiotics, and then it's gone. I think it's oversimplified, and I think that does not look, even if the partner was treated as well, 7 days of antibiotics is like, hey, we need to kill, and then let's get the die-off effect. And then as the ureoplasma, there's different levels and life cycles of it, if we can make sure that we get it. And sometimes people will take a year to clear it. I don't see a year when I'm addressing the methylation, the nutrients, the immune system, and other pathogens. But if you're in that situation where you've taken so many antibiotics and you've done so many things and you have still not been able to clear it, it's time to look a little bit deeper and to really understand, when did that bug come into, when did it come into your system, into your terrain? Why is it still there? What do you need to process and let go of? So then we can go on to, you know, the next stage. So we're not going to guess. We're going to test. We're not going to just randomly take protocols and hope that it works. You're going to retest. You're going to test your partner. And I want you, most importantly, to be aware of the energetic component of the bug, how you think, how you feel, the heaviness in your body, the heaviness anywhere, the frustrations that you have. A lot of it is a reflection of what's going on physically in your system. So when we change physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, we're able to feel and express and perceive the world in a very different way. And like I said, this is where I really love to follow the transformation with my clients. Thank you for being here. I hope you enjoyed this. If you want to fill out an application to see if we can help, please follow the link to do that. Say hello on social media. We always love answering questions and connecting with our listeners. Thank you again for being here, and I'll see you next week.